Josh and Frankie.
What a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, primates! I got it right on the second try. You found Primus Tracks. Congratulations! Wow! We are so excited here at Primus Tracks Towers. We're about to crawl through Green Naga Hide. I am Josh. I am so excited about that. Joining me, as always, the stalwart Primus expert, Frankie.
Hi, Josh.
Yeah.
It's a huge day for Team Envelope Filter. I just heard the other day that there is Team No Envelope Filter.
Yes.
Starting to rise on Instagram, and I find it deeply disturbing.
I will tell you, Frankie, I have no affiliation or membership with that organization.
Oh, that's great.
I am remaining neutral, but I will say I am recording this episode under protest. We're beginning this crawl through 2011's Green Naga Hide, and who better to join us for the first leg of the journey than a man with powerful quads? He can help pedal us through the muck of this track. He's best known as the bassist for the mighty trio, The Special. And I think if he started his own soccer team, he'd probably call them the Cleveland Steemans. It's Luke Beamond!
Hey, Luke.
What's up, Josh and Frankie? Great to be back. It is an honor to kick off Green Naga Hide and to be on another one of Frankie's favorite tracks. So thank you guys so much for having me
it's
back.
It's starting to become a great tradition, Luke.
That's right.
It's an honor.
I think you hit the trifecta because we had you on in an emergency fashion for Parrot for my favorite track. And you've been on for two of Frankie's favorites.
I love it. You guys can call me anytime. Put me in, coach. I'm on the bench.
He's wearing his Cleveland Steemans jersey right now, actually.
That was a good Beamon pun. I'll give you that one, too.
Luke, thanks for joining us, man. And I do want to ask, for historical purposes, where were you in September of 2011 when you picked up Green Naga Hide?
I was at Berklee College of Music in Boston, eagerly awaiting the release of Green Naga Hide. I remember buying the album. And I don't know, that might have even been like Looney Tunes Records. That was the wow. record store near Berklee back in the 2000s. And yeah, I remember buying this album and the weird little guy on the bike and bringing it home and blasting it in our apartment and rejoicing for New Primus. So yeah, I remember the album release very well.
Excellent. Similar for me, you know, I had to go to work that day, I think, and then I ran. Not actually ran, that would be too much effort. I drove to the record store and picked that thing up. I think it was only $10. I think it was on super sale on release day. So I was really excited about that, too. It was cheap New Primus, which is always great. And I spent pretty much that entire evening playing the album over and over again. Good times. I remember that well. I remember the room I was sitting in. It was very blue. I picked a really bold blue for that room. I even chose the wrong color. What a fool.
Yeah, I was going to say. I've got you. The people at home can't hear but or see, rather, but I've got my green LED lights on in honor of Green Naga. So I hope you guys at least appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. They are illuminating you in such a pleasing way.
Great.
I can't look away. Frankie, how about you? You probably picked this one up on release day, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I recall visiting the official website and being, you know, really, really intrigued by the artwork. I thought, wow, you know, that little guy with the bike that looks like an antique toy. And then reading the track list, I thought, yeah, this is totally Primus, right? Some of these song titles are just so Primus. And I emphasize that because up to that point, I had purchased Les Claypool solo albums upon release date. And, you know, they were amazing in their own right, but it wasn't the same. So, I mean, getting excited even before listening to the album, just by reading the track titles, was something very Primus for me. So that was a very peculiar time because I was actually starting my first job. And I recall that I would listen to Green Naga Hide on repeat on the way to work and on the way back. And it was kind of like a highlight of the day. But the week when the album came out was very special because for some strange reason, I had a Friday off that particular week. And I remember going for a long walk and, you know, listening to the album twice. And then I came back home and I did some stuff. And then in the evening, I felt like listening to the album again, but doing it old school. So I remember inserting the CD into the stereo, and I was just looking at the artwork, reading the lyrics,
yes,
smelling the booklet. It was like, wow, you know, I never imagined I would have the chance to do this with a Primus album. And it was just so good that I couldn't stop playing it. I mean, that day I probably heard it three times, so or even more. And then I just became addicted to the album. I couldn't stop listening to it, and it's a huge part of my life, for sure.
Fun fact, Frankie's first job was the equipment manager for the Cleveland Steamans. So there's that. You know, well, you say that, Frankie. You tell us about this experience, and we're making no secret of it. This is Hennepin Crawler is a top two Primus track for you.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
It's exciting to talk about it. I take that back. It's exciting for you to talk about it. I mean, because right now
I'm incredibly pumped for this track.
Well, and I'm not going to bring anybody down. I don't want to cast a pall over anything. But to me, this is a middle of the road Primus track. But I'm going to put it to you to change my mind tonight. And maybe Luke, you can assist as well. So we should mention, of course, it's the second track of the record. The first track is called Prelude to a Crawl. So they are, I suppose, thematically linked with the word crawl. And I want to go back to something you said, Frankie. I remember when the track list for this record was released ahead of time, I did, and I'm sure a lot of people like to do this, they look at the track titles and they try to predict what it's going to sound like or some of the deliveries. And so I just remember thinking, Prelude to a Crawl, Hennepin Crawler, and you know the most recent Les Claypool record to that point had been of Fungi and Foe. So I was thinking about how he was going to deliver the word crawl, and that's all I could think of. And I was thinking, okay, he's going to say that 1,000 times, and it's going to be great. And I wasn't too far off, so I felt pretty good about that. But I don't want to delay any longer. Frankie is about to boil over. His excitement is palpable. We should talk about Hennepin Crawler, and as we often do, we're going to talk about live history, but I think you have a lot more than that, Frankie.
For sure. Just like a footnote before we dive completely into the Hennepin Crawler experience. Speaking of Prelude to a Crawl, I remember being equally intrigued like you about that title, and I thought, of course, you know, the first track has to be linked to Hennepin Crawler.
Yeah.
I was in for a complete surprise, because it's like Prelude to a Crawl is like this very atmospheric thing that is just building up tension. Mm-hmm. And then Prelude to a Crawl just hits you in the face, right? And we're going to talk about that in a moment.
Right, yeah, but Hennepin does that, yeah.
But there is something bittersweet about Prelude to a Crawl, because after they were done performing the album in its entirety back to back, they just cherry-picked songs from the album to continue playing in the sets. And there were several occasions where they would do Prelude to a Crawl. And then when it was over, and you could imagine everybody was probably expecting Hennepin Crawler mm-hmm. to blast with full power, they actually went into The Last Salmon Man. So The Last Salmon Man is a fantastic song, but in this context, if you are expecting Hennepin Crawler and you get The Last Salmon Man after Prelude to a Crawl, for me, it's similar to listening to the bass line of Under Pressure, getting excited, and then discovering that it's the Vanilla Ice track, right?
It's a great analogy. Both those scenarios piss me off.
What a great one. Absolutely. And you're right. That Prelude to a Crawl is interesting in and of itself. And I remember there being some kvetching back when the album was released that it sounded too much like a Les Claypool solo track. Because if you look at some of his solo records, it usually starts with some kind of bass loop and some kind of bass melody. And then you're off and running with the second track. So for those of you that are bitching about Conspiranoid sounding too much like solo Les, we got you beat by a decade, suckers. So... but then the other thing I thought, and I don't want to take up too much time with the intro track, but I remember thinking at the time, Prelude to a Crawl, I thought he was talking about a baby because, you know, that's what they do. They kind of flop around before they learn to crawl. So I thought maybe there was some kind of grand metaphor for them learning to crawl or walk again as a band. But I don't actually think that's the case. So, but it's intriguing in of itself. And then, then they blow the doors off with Hennepin Crawler. So, Frankie, why don't you blow our doors
off? It's understandable. I mean, you were onto something, Josh, because then at the end of the record, you have Extinction Burst, which is kind of related to the topic of children, right?
Oh, we'll get there in a few weeks.
We'll get there for sure. All right. So let me tell you some things about Hennepin Crawler.
Yes.
So let's start by discussing the actual Hennepin Crawler. This contraption was designed by Crank Boom Clank. They are Clifford Hill, Sky Barnett, David Farish, and Dan Kirby. They are four Santa Rosa artist welders. There's actually a website where you can see how they put it together from scratch, and it's really amazing. I mean, these guys are artists in their own right. It could be, you know, you could see them maneuvering the Hennepin Crawler around Burning Man back in 2008. This item became one of the biggest attractions at the event. But first, it had to obtain approval from the Burning Man DMV, which in this case stands for Department of Mutant Vehicles. The Hennepin Crawler has also been in exhibition, and it's quite a piece to behold, not only in motion, but also, of course, like a museum piece in and on itself. So here's a quote from the welders. They said, "The only thing we had set was that it would be pedal powered and that it had four seats, since there are four of us." They were inspired by a Tom Waits song called Ninth and Hennepin to name the machine.
Oh, sure. Oh,
cool. It was made out of found objects for the most part. They even put a metal hammock in the center, which was retrieved from a dumpster. 90% of the Hennepin Crawler is recyclable, and it includes discarded lawn furniture, VW bug and antique Cadillac parts, old wooden furniture, industrial culvert pipe and aviation wire, old bike bits, and other minor found parts. So what is very interesting is that, of course, this vehicle caught the attention of Les Claypool. You can perfectly match his fashion sense at the time with this vehicle, right? It's a match made in heaven. So yeah. It's no surprise that Les found inspiration in the Hennepin Crawler in order to write a song. Mm-hmm. And then it's also a pretty important piece of Primus history because the Hennepin Crawler was the centerpiece for the first Primus photo shoot in a long time.
Right.
So there's a wonderful photo session where we can see Jay Lane, Les, and Lur maneuvering around the device. And
yeah.
I don't know about you, Luke and Josh, but for me, it was terribly exciting to see an official photo shoot again after such a long time.
That was their first one since Odd 3, right?
That's right. The first one since the desert session with the inflatable things.
Right, yeah. By the way, that photo shoot is still available. You can see it on Flickr. I believe it's Sassy Monkey Media. If you search for them on Flickr, you can see the 40-odd pictures they posted from that day in Santa Rosa when Primus was playing around on the Hennepin Crawler. It's pretty great.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I love that. I love the both of those photo shoots. And clearly, Les and Primus love going to the desert and doing their shoots and going on whatever vision quests, you know, are ensuing during those photo shoots. And yeah, I loved seeing that too. Like when I heard the song name Hennepin Crawler evoked, obviously, this kind of some weird, almost, yeah, like industrial insect. To be honest, I kind of thought of the big metal spider in Wild Wild West. But, you know, that's... That movie's never far from my mind. But then when I found out it was like a Burning Man art car, I was like, okay, that makes more sense with Les and with the whole steampunk girls line and all that. But yeah, thematically, it is really cool to have that photo shoot that really goes with this song so well.
Right.
And considering an official band photo shoot has become an incredibly rare event, that session is something to cherish.
Right. Yeah, considering now they're still using the three
photos from 2003.
Yeah, it's for promotional purposes.
20 years later, crying out loud.
Good photo shoots.
Yeah.
In terms of live history, Josh, Hennepin Crawler was premiered on May 20th, 2011 in Memphis. It was first played along with other new tracks from Green Naugahyde at random spots throughout the set list. Then it acquired a fixed spot in the sets when the album started being played back-to-back as the second set of the evening. After the full album tour was finished, Hennepin Crawler, surprisingly, was only played once for the last time on May 18th, 2013 in Tucson. It's an extremely interesting song. I mean, we're going to go deeper, but I just want to say that since the first time I heard the track, I thought this is a piece of music with incredibly complex dynamics in terms of structure and instrumentation. Right off the bat, J Lane's drums are incredibly busy, right? I mean, they kick off the track with an intricate drum fill, and we always discuss how each drummer is unique, and you don't have to see them play. You just have to listen to the songs, and you know which drummer is behind the kit. And I remember very interesting discussions in the Bulwark about how would Tim Alexander have approached this track. Maybe it would have been slower. Maybe it would have had different feels. Maybe it would have been darker, a little sluggish, but it was not meant to be. I mean, this is a J Lane track, and as such, we have that really awesome feel from the get-go. The bass line has that rubbery effect from the beloved Envelope Filter. And although it maintains a similar groove throughout the song, the bass line is sometimes distorted, and other times it's played with slight differences that were never replicated note by note in a live setting compared to the album version. I mean, you can hear three different versions of Hennepin Crawler live, and they are going to be totally different. I mean, Les was pretty much just going with it every night. So he would always do something different in terms of distortion, in terms of tone, in terms of noodling. And the song also stands out because it has a bass solo, which is something that we always appreciate in a Primus track. And of course, it's no surprise that this particular solo was never replicated live exactly as it is in the record. He would always do something different with it. Vocally, I think the track is sung on the bullet microphone, which gives it a very lo-fi feel at times, which I consider is part of the charm of the song. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we have some vocal contributions from Lur at the end of the track in the Hennepin Crawler portion, right? That's Les and Lur at the same time.
Oh, I'm not certain about that. I'll have to listen closer.
We have to listen closer, but I believe it very well could be.
Well, either way, Lur's mic is turned way down, so how are you going to know?
Yeah. Hennepin Crawler is not only my favorite song on Green Naugahyde, it very well could be one of my favorite Primus tracks ever. I mean, there are other contenders like Carpenter, so I'm hesitant to name it my favorite, but it's definitely in a top two. If I had to pick any other Primus song, Hennepin would still be in the top two. So I can tell you that I know by heart every single note of the bass, as well as the main riff, and where Les is doing some variation with distortion. And we're going to cue some of those examples because I think they're pretty cool to listen to. So what do you guys think about Hennepin Crawler in general terms?
Luke, go for it.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, I share the same sentiment, Frankie, as to that excitement when it came out and just new Primus and with J Lane back in the band and, you know, Of Wells and Woe and A Fungi and Foe had been fun and cool, but it was so exciting to get new Primus. And yeah, this track really starts the album off with some momentum and some gusto, which I really liked. And the song really does like kind of just power on. And, you know, and it's got that it just like even like the go, you know, it's like a vehicle. It propels you forward. And I always have loved that like forward kind of motion of the track. And it's a really driving tune, which is funny. It's like the crawl. It's like all these kind of, you know, adjectives you can use are kind of like describing like a vehicle, you know, like it's a driving track and it's got this really good flow to it. So it started the album off with a bang, which was really exciting to me. I'm kind of with Josh where it's not my favorite. I think it's a cool, fun, vamp in Primus. And it probably is my favorite track off Green Naugahyde. But it just doesn't quite have like the epicness of some of my favorite Primus tracks, like a Frizzle Fry or Tommy the Cat or things like that. But I think it's a really cool entry and it's a great track off this album and was a really fun first track to hear with the new band for sure. So yeah. And you know, and the envelope filter I think works really well here, but I'm sure we'll talk more about that in a little bit.
Yeah. I will say it's up tempo and that's a great way to start a record. And you do get a nice Jay Lane, introduction. So they, and that had to be planned, right? Let's give Jay some space to say hello to everybody. Mm. But starting with this track and then going through the rest of the record, I always had an issue with how it was produced as far as the soundscapes and the dynamics of the drums. I just don't feel like they're full enough. And I think Jay mentioned to us he wished he had recorded those drums again. And I wonder if it was from a sound quality point of view or if he felt like he didn't quite nail all the parts or perhaps more than that. So
he had said it on that or Les said it on the episode with you guys. On the episode with Rory and Les and Adam Gates. I think he had said like they did the take of it and Jay wasn't really happy and wanted to do his take again. But Les was like, ah, it's fine. Go ahead. And then Les said on the podcast, he's like listening back. Yeah, maybe we could have done a couple more takes, which is funny.
I don't know. Well, I'm glad they didn't touch anything. I mean, for me, the record is perfect as it is. I cannot imagine anything different.
Well, we know since about the Pork Soda era that they are pretty spontaneous in the studio. And I think that carries over because this track has that feeling of spontaneity, especially with the bass solo and a lot of the vamping on the main bass line. And, you know, Larry doing Larry things and so on. So it is looser, I think, as far as structure goes, because it allows all three of these guys to meander around and make some noise. So I think it does have a few things going for it. You know, I'd call it a middle of the road track, but I think I'm going to end up pointing out a bunch of things I like and then saying, okay, I like it more. So as often happens on this podcast.
Yeah.
Josh, can I cue for you two pieces of ear candy in the song?
Bring it.
First one is 1 minute, 18 seconds. In that mark, in 1 minute with 18 seconds, there's some pretty cool distortion on the bass.
There's that, and the other thing I've started to do on any of these recordings where it's Les on bass and Jay on drums, I'm listening to the kick and I'm listening to Les's right hand, essentially. And they're in lockstep again. They just have this thing. They just have this
totally
thing going there.
Can you play 3 minutes with 28 seconds, Josh?
3 minutes, 28 seconds. We're getting dangerously close to the end of the tune, and this is probably my favorite part of it.
That's just ear candy. There's no other way around it.
Yeah, it's a great stinger ending.
So Jay gives a lot there. I don't hear Lur on the vocals, but that doesn't mean it's not him. Boy, yeah, Jay's bringing it. And he's actually sounds like he's playing double kick, which he doesn't normally do. So he really was bringing it on that track. I guess after rehearsing a bunch of Tim Alexander tunes, you're going to be really good at double kick.
Yeah.
So he
you can hear it.
Here.
You can hear that. This is like the first Primus song that Jay Ray wrote that has the double kick in it. And it's cool because his kick part with Les's bass part are super locked, like you said.
Do you have any issues, Luke, with the production? Coming back to it, on some of these tracks, I think, man, it sounds like Jay is playing a toy kit almost.
Yeah, I share that sentiment. I don't love the mixing on this album of Jay's drums. They're a little bit too tight, a little bit too polished and clean. There's not enough room sound to it. I would prefer a little bit of a boomier, bigger sound. The playing is great, but yeah, it's almost like too tight, and it almost just sounds like it was recorded in a really small space as opposed to Pork Soda. That sounded like it was recorded in like an old haunted asylum or something, you know? So yeah, and the envelope filter bass is just going to kind of sound how it sounds. It sounds very direct, and that's when Les records with it. But yeah, I agree with you on the drum sound there.
Okay.
I can officially confirm, guys, I just pulled up some live performances of Hennepin Crawler, and I did see Larry approaching the microphone during the ending. So he is on vacuum vocals for the last Hennepin Crawler part.
Okay, at least live, right?
Yes, live.
Okay. Or maybe he was just telling the stagehands he needed a glass of water. I don't
know. It sounds like him and Herb are both doing those goes as well, you know, in the hook there.
Oh, sure, it could be Jay and Lur, yeah.
It sounds a little bit different than Les's voice, so maybe that's both those guys, maybe it's just Herb, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or sorry, maybe it's just Jay.
I know, you got to
get me thinking
Jay
about the
now.
Double kick now. Now, yeah, you know, now it's Jay is becoming Herb.
I didn't mention it yet, but this track does have them saying go, and that's a Frankie staple.
Yeah. I love it.
You know, for a song about a vehicle, I'm surprised, Frankie, it never became a jam vehicle.
Absolutely. I mean, they did modify one portion of the track in a live setting, and we're actually going to listen to that particular part when we reach the live cuts today. But yeah, it was pretty much a straightforward number.
Oh, okay. Another thing that I had to bring up while you're talking, and of course we're going to, Luke, you're holding that bass, so we have to, you know, it's the gun thing. It's a Chekhov's gun thing. You have to play it at some point, so we'll get there.
I'm comfortable just holding it.
So oh, okay.
Don't mind me.
Security blanket of a sort. You're
yes.
Okay. So when I draw you as Linus, I don't need a blanket. I need a bass.
Security bass. Exactly.
Got it. Okay. I remember seeing a little while ago that the Hennepin Crawler was up for sale, and
Turns
out it may still be. I'm seeing a listing for it. And of course, they mentioned that Primus wrote a song about it. And there's the promo picture with the band on the vehicle.
Was it for sale on eBay?
It's listed on this thing called Cars Comms. I have no idea what that is. But they want 17 G's for it. So
you know, could start a Primus Tracks GoFundMe and get Frankie a Hennepin Crawler.
Right? You know, we got that demo tape.
We could arrive to a show in the Hennepin Crawler.
Let's take the next step up and get the Hennepin Crawler. Yes.
Look, I am extremely curious. Is Hennepin Crawler a difficult song to play?
I would say, like, in the pantheon of Claypool bass lines, not super difficult. You know, it's more about just getting that sound, that envelope filter signature Claypool sound, which isn't always easy. As I'll show you guys, I can do my imitation of it. Nobody can sound quite like Les. But technique-wise and fingering, it's pretty much a vamp. It's kind of just one bass line, couple fills. The bass solo is cool, but it's pretty simple and repeats a lot. So I wouldn't say it's on the more difficult side now.
For a long time, I was intrigued because, I mean, now there are a few available, but for a long time, there were no Hennepin Crawler covers at all on YouTube. And I always wondered, does it come down to the song being very hard to play, or is it the lack of popularity of the track? But what you say makes sense. Perhaps it is that without the Claypool envelope filter effect, it just doesn't sound the same if you play the strings dry, right? I mean,
yeah, I think that's a good point. That must contribute to it. You don't hear a lot of the songs, like even songs off Antipop, where the envelope filter is more prevalent. You don't hear a lot of bands covering it. I mean, I can say that Le Special covered this, but we covered it like right when it came out. You know, this album dropped in September, and we played a small festival in New Hampshire in October called the Magnetic Gathering. It was in that 2011. It was like a small festival, and we were just really into the album. So we came out, and I'm pretty sure we just opened the set with Hennepin Crawler. I don't think anyone there knew it.
That's awesome.
yeah, we were having fun, and maybe we were having more fun playing it than anybody under that tent, but I have no regrets about that.
Awesome.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the bass line there. Why don't you want to give us a demo?
Sure. Yeah. So I brought, for Frankie here, I brought my Digitech Bass Synthwah envelope filter. I'd hold it up to show you, but it's plugged into my interface.
Thank you very much.
Yes, no problem. I had to bring it. I couldn't do this episode, obviously, without it. I can take a picture and send it to you guys, you know, so you can even post it up on your Instagram if people want to check it out. I'm sure a lot of bassists that listen to this podcast are already familiar with this pedal, but for anyone who isn't, it's a pretty standard bassist go-to pedal if you want that envelope filter sound, if you want to sound like any of those Claypool bass lines. I've had this pedal for like 15 years. It's a workhorse. It still sounds great. There's some really cool sounds in it. It doesn't sound exactly like Claypool's, and I don't know exactly what he uses for his envelope filter. There's threads and discussions on like Reddit about it. I'm sure some other bassists that listen to or a guest on the podcast might know more than me. I know Soya will never give that secret away, so there's no point in asking him. Like a common thing that people say on the internet is like use a bass envelope filter. This Digitech one will suffice in most situations, and a bass fuzz to get some of that distortion you're talking about. The biggest thing that I found, what's really hard is to make your envelope filter as like wet as less as it is. That really like underwater wet sound is really difficult to emulate. So, I mean, the setting I've got here, you know, it's like got an there's like eight different settings on it. This is just set to the second one, which is sub envelope. The main two people use for this are either envelope filter or sub envelope. The sub just gives it a little bit more low end, sounds a little bit better. So, so that's my wet envelope filter. That's about as wet as I can make it, which isn't as wet as less is, but you know, it gets the job done for some certain like Claypool bass lines around that time, like things like Rumble of the Diesel and things like that. You know, it gives you that pop, but again, it's missing that like fuzziness or that wetness that he gets, and that's just his custom sound. The bass line itself is pretty simple. It's just an interval of a minor sixth down, which you can relate to Nature Boy, which is actually the same two bass notes. Huh. Nature Boy is just... And obviously he taps that and is shaking his tremolo bar. Mm-hmm. You can just play it with a lot of vibrato, but that's just a minor sixth down. So it's an E-flat down to a B, or if you're on a bass or guitar, it would be your sixth fret A string down to your seventh fret E string.
And look, so, I'm sorry. Yeah. That is absolutely fascinating. That's why it's fantastic to have musicians on board, because I would have never related Hennepin Crawler to Nature Boy.
Mm. Yeah, it doesn't really sound much like it, but it's that interval in there, and that minor six, you know, it's very bass and just a Phrygian scale, which is a go-to for Les. So he's fond of this interval for sure. Now the bass line itself, it's just kind of, so with those two notes, the rhythm is just kind of, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you've got that E flat down to that B and, you know, J, that little syncopated double kick. And then you're just kind of hitting these two harmonics on your fifth fret D and G string. And that's not really in key. It's just kind of more of a rhythmic thing, and it sounds cool. And that's kind of all that's going on with the bass line. It's just that back and forth with a little fill. Sometimes he throws in some higher register Phrygian fills.
But what are those fills like, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know them exactly, but you know, like, you know, it's like a Phrygian scale. So if you're going off a Phrygian scale in E flat, be like, so. You know, things like that, like the bass solo itself, which I don't know note for note, but it starts with that, like, you know, that kind of vibe, and that's just all Phrygian kind of noodling, but not as well as Les does it. But that's the idea, yeah.
And there's a part where he's going, like, really fast at the bottom of the neck, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like the ending that, like, and then he takes it down the You know, so it all kind of stays in that register there. But, you know, when you're talking about how sometimes it sounds more distorted, I think when you just use an envelope filter, your touch sensitivity affects that. So when you're really digging in, you have versus like, you know, it's touch sensitive. That's why it almost sounds like it almost is like alive the way Les plays it and his inflection on it, which is something I enjoy about the envelope filter.
I'm struggling to think of things I enjoy about the envelope filter, but you know, I do enjoy it in certain aspects, and then I just sometimes it's overused. To hear it on the essentially opening track of this record, I thought, all right, here we go. But it's, you know, once again, there's enough going on this track that it's not, it doesn't detract too much, you know, even though, of course, it's maligned, you know, for sounding like flatulence. So there is that aspect to it, but it's a matter of taste, I suppose, at that point. So there's really no use in evaluating it or making those judgments. Can I play some of that bass solo? Because you mentioned a few things, but what really strikes me is how almost reckless he sounds with the bass solo. And what I mean by that is he's really syncopated. He's just kind of playing whatever he wants because Jay's really holding it down. And when you've got a drummer who can do that, you can pretty much do whatever you want, and it's going to sound good, even if it doesn't sound like it belongs, if that makes any sense. Luke, it probably does to you, because one of my favorite lines from the 742 episodes we've done so far is, you know, you said something like, well, it's Primus, so why the hell not, right? It doesn't matter. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, I think it was, you were like, key change, sure. You know, so Les is just doing all kinds of stuff. He almost sounds like he's 25 again, just playing all this wacky shit and no regard for time signature, no regard for what's going on around him. He's just being self-indulgent, you know, as a stalwart bassist yourself, as a talented man. I'd love to hear what you have to say about this. So he does a lot of stuff there. There's some acrobatics going on that, you know, he's just playing that minor sound and run there, but he's not necessarily doing it in time. He's syncopating the hell out of it. And then he gets to play with the tremolo bar. So there's a lot of great stuff happening there to me.
Yeah, he really goes for it with that solo. And I think that he was just vibing playing with Jay. I think going back to what they talked about when they did this cut and maybe Jay wanted to do more takes, Les was just feeling the energy on it. And clearly he was because, yeah, that's a solo that, you know, he probably didn't go in and was chopping up. That was probably just the one take and he was into it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, he's kind of pulling out all the stops on that. He's got like the flamenco strumming. He's got the whammy bar. He's doing that like kind of almost like on Suck on This, like Tommy the Cat. That solo is so awesome. And he just goes out of key a lot of the time and plays notes that aren't necessarily in the scale or the key, but it just works because he's just playing with this like gusto and, you know, and those mighty Claypool balls of his. And it just works. And when he's playing just super confidently like that, yeah, I agree. It makes him sound like a young man again. So, yeah, it's a great solo. He clearly was having fun during this take. I can't play any of it, though.
So do you think, Luke, this is one of those cases where when they were rehearsing the album to be performed live, Les said, there's no way I'm going to learn that note by note. I'm just going to play whatever comes to my mind.
Yeah, totally. I think it's almost like, you know, in Herald of the Rocks, like that little bass solo, those little interludes change every night. I think those little things are fun for Les, those little like microcosms of improv where he just gets to go nuts. And that's what he does in the studio, too. Les doesn't strike me as somebody who does 10 takes of a bass solo and then goes in and finds his favorite one or pieces them together. I think if he's feeling a take, then they just roll with that. And I think the same applies live. So, yeah.
You explained very well the feels, Luke, but there's still one particular kind of feel in the track, which I'm curious about. And you can hear some of it in the solo, too. But to give you a clearer idea, Josh, can you please play the track at 1 minute?
Oh, nice.
That one.
He just runs up the neck on that one.
That's just less seeing how far he could reach up the bass there.
So he's going down on the neck, right?
Yeah, he's just going super high up. I don't know what bass he used for this record. Was it maybe Frankie or Josh, you know, was it a Pachyderm prototype? I feel like around this tour was when he was playing that Pachyderm that was like the Geddy Lee-looking bass, the black and white Pachyderm. Yeah.
So I,
no, the black and white, the black and white Pachyderm came around 2017.
But oh, okay.
Yeah, he used it just for a few shows and then it disappeared. So what you can see in the earliest renditions of Green Naga Hive when they were premiering these tracks for the first time is a Pachyderm.
It is a Pachyderm.
So it had to be one of those first ones, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I don't know the exact dimensions of it, but I know like his Carl Thompsons just have a really long neck. Like a lot of them are like 36-inch scale, which is super long. Like mine is 32-inch, and that's considered short, not technically a short scale, but smaller than a traditional bass. And yeah, I mean, sometimes he hits notes that you just can't really play on. You couldn't play it on a Fender bass. You couldn't play it on like a 21 or 24 fret bass. So he's flexing the range and using the envelope filter there. So yeah, that's just another fill with a lot of gusto, and he's going for it. And I like how he's hitting a lot of those different harmonics throughout that solo and some of his fills. And I think he's just feeling that harmonic sound with the envelope filter, which is a cool effect.
Yeah, that is a nice fill. That's very Claypoolian, yes, for sure. The way that that's delivered, pretty. You know, I'm not going to say standard, but I'll say Claypoolian. It's not surprising. I guess we can say that.
Yeah, that's a good term. Have we used Claypoolian on the podcast before?
I don't think so.
No, it's completely new.
Okay.
Yes, I just coined it today. I'm sure it's been said before, but we'll say Claypoolian. Yes.
Oh, that's a primus. We're gonna have to trademark that.
I guess what gets me, though, is Larry's there, but he's not doing a ton. Like, he's doing textures, but he's skanking a lot. And I think that was what was most disappointing to me, because I thought, all right, these guys are so inspired. They've been jamming like crazy. Here comes this record. And then Larry's just, map, map. Boy, all this time, and he just comes out with, map, map. Now, I know he does a lot more on this record, but it was, you know, you heard a lot of that in the Brown album. You heard it on Antipop, and I thought, all right, we're going to get these great Lur riffs. But, you know, he skanks all the time, so I guess it's not too surprising.
But he's also doing something very ethereal in the background throughout this track.
Mm. Right, especially during that bass solo and around that those timestamps, he's doing some textural stuff that's really bizarre, and I think it's really cool.
Pretty cool.
Yes.
Yeah, I was listening to the bass solo myself and trying to think if that was Less or Lur that create almost this kind of like feedback, like distortion hum that they play over. But yeah, it works. I agree, it's kind of a standard like stock Lur part, but it works. You know, the skanks are either going to be his upbeat or the downbeats on the 2 and the 4, and that 2 and the 4 I think help give it that driving momentum that this song has. And then just that single note in the chorus or the hook or whatever you want to call it, that opens it. You know, it opens it up a lot. And sometimes those really simple Lur parts just work the best for the song. And just Less is clearly going crazy with the envelope filter. And so I think reserved Lur works for this part. But yeah, sometimes he's just kind of on autopilot with it. Not to get off track, but I was listening to your guys' episode on the Conspiranoid EP, and Lur has some like really just inventive, cool parts, and it's so fun to hear him be creative with his songwriting. It just shows you like he can write guitar parts like nobody else. But sometimes he's there just to skank and support Less, and it works for this track.
Yeah. Let's also copyright or trademark Reserved Lur. I think that's a good one.
Yeah, Reserved Lur. That's a hashtag.
Yeah, that's going to be my new cover band. So, you know, I don't have much to say on the guitar there because some parts it just feels buried too, but he's there, and that's always good, right? He seems like he's kind of the golden boy of Primus, you know? Lur can do no wrong almost. And I think that came through with a lot of people's opinions as far as the new EP. They're just like, it's great to hear Larry. I like hearing him too. And it had been some time at that point in 2011. We hadn't heard any Primus out of him.
Lur's been waiting until the 2022 Conspiranoid EP to show us what he's really got in the tank there.
And that's the conspiracy. He waited that long. Let's talk about the lyrics, I suppose. I didn't really look at them all that much because I never really thought there was much to him. It seemed like there was a lot of nonsense going on, but I do love the vocal delivery, I will say, through that bullet mic with that distortion on it. It's not just the bullet mic. He's turning up the gain big time because he's getting a lot of distortion going through there.
Yes, and he was using the Hennepin Crawler as a centerpiece to talk about assorted characters throughout the song that maybe they weren't deep enough to occupy a full song, but they work in the microcosmos of this song.
Yeah. I suppose if you're pedaling around on the Hennepin Crawler, this is what you see as you make your way through Burning Man or, I don't know, the beaches of California. The line that always sticks with me is, ride the Hennepin Crawler for a dollar and impress them steampunk girls. And that was right at that time where steampunk was pretty damn big. So there were a lot of people running around in that kind of getup.
Yeah, Les has always had that steampunk vibe. He's fond of his goggles and top hats. And you know, you got to wonder, like, did he ride the Hennepin Crawler at Burning Man? I mean, I know he's been to different Burning Man events, and I've never been myself. I have a lot of friends that have been, and apparently one of the most fun things to do is at night just ride around on a bike or whatever your mode of transport is, and like they, you know, they deck out these art cars and they cover their bikes in like glowing lights, and you just go, man. I mean, that's like, that's a whole city in the desert, and you can go pretty far to the edges. So maybe Les just had some like life changing cruise at night on the Hennepin Crawler, a vision quest, maybe.
Perhaps
in the desert,
he certainly saw some things, though. You know, guy showing his crusty old pickle for a nickel. Which there's a lot of great internal rhyme. I do have to say, crawler for a dollar, pie in the sky, pickle for a
nickel. That's one of my favorite lines in the song. But you know, it's really mind blowing for me to confirm that it's crusty because I always heard greasy.
I think it's crusty, which yes, it certainly changed the imagery, doesn't it? Just enough to disturb you. I don't know. There isn't a lot of depth to these lyrics to me, but you know, this is one of those tunes where they're pushing forward. As Luke said, it's a driving song. So we're not going to, I suppose, meditate on the lyrics as much as something like My Friend Fats, which is one of the last studio tracks we covered. So we're breezing along on this crawler. Although I should say the other one I really like is She Sold Seashells. Say, I can't even say it. She Sold Seashells and Other Things Down by the Old Seashore.
Isn't that like a traditional rhyme?
Yes. It's a tongue twister. Yeah. It's an old English tongue twister. I'm twisted just talking about it.
That proves it right there.
The next line, though, is really interesting. When she sold her song to a beer commercial, she looked like a filthy whore. I'm like, damn. Because we know that Primus had been approached in the 90s about that stuff, and they always said no. So I suppose.
Yeah, it's Les's disdain for commercialism, I guess.
Right.
Still and, going strong.
And that's interesting because we get a hint of it here, and then it comes back strongly later in the record on a couple of tracks. Most notably, Hone for the Man, I suppose.
There's actually a basketball team that used to use Hennepin Crawler for their games, right? I mean, and they don't have to ask Les for permission to do that, right?
There's a basketball team like playing this track in the arena?
Yeah.
What? Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
What team?
Yeah. Was it the Cleveland Demons?
I don't recall who it was particularly, but it's something that I read on the billboard that there was a sports team using Hennepin Crawler.
I know that they don't own the rights to all of their tunes because I remember hearing things like the Beaver song as bumper music for sporting events on TV and My Name is Mud as well. So, you know, who is it now? Universal, like UMG or whatever, owns the rights to those tunes. So they can sell those. But Hennepin Crawler, that would have had to come from Les himself. It was going to be used in an advertisement. But I don't know how it works when you're just playing music in an arena at a sporting event, if you have to pay royalties or not.
I'm just trying to like imagine like a basketball team coming out to Hennepin Crawler and just like, they're about to be my favorite team. I've been looking for a reason to stop supporting the Knicks my whole life, so maybe this is...
Oh, I can give you a lot of reasons to do that. Nah, you know enough. So I don't have a ton to say about the lyrics, but I really do like that part. The steampunk girls, the burn in your thigh. Just that repetition of you get to bite that pie in the sky. And that's another English idiom that you're probably familiar with, which is kind of an unrealistic prospect. So the pie in the sky is something you reach for but don't normally achieve. When you're on the Hennepin Crawler, you actually get a taste of the pie in the sky, which is very cool imagery to me. Other than that, you know, pretty surface for me.
And when they perform the song live, the final delivery of the phrase Hennepin Crawler is particularly cool because there's some emphasis on the writhe.
Yes.
We'll hear an example of that when we do the live cuts.
Yes. I do find myself when I hear this song, I will for a while afterwards just repeat to myself, Hennepin, Hennepin Crawler. It's fun to say. It's a great rhythm.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets stuck in your head, especially with the unison rhythm and they're all singing along with the bass line there. It definitely is an earworm.
And then, of course, I find myself replacing it with other things, like the names of my dogs, that sort of thing. You know, Pearly Pearl, Pearly, Pearly Pearl, Pearl. So, Luke knows Pearl.
Yo, your dogs are amazing. I want to meet them IRL.
Yeah, we're going to stop talking about Primus, talk about dogs now. Everybody.
Aren't they both beagles? Don't you have two beagles?
I have two beagles. Yes, I do.
Incredible.
That'll get us more followers, Frankie.
Oh my God, you should be posting pictures of these beagles every day.
Yes, with Primus Records leaning up against them.
That will aid the algorithms for sure.
Yes. Okay, I'm writing that down. Beagles. Primus Records.
Yeah, let's go to the live tracks.
It looks like our first one is Austin, Texas.
It sounds really fantastic for an audience recording. Very clear and very crisp.
Ooh, listen to that tempo too. That hi-hat is killing me. Yeah, I like the sound of that one. It sounds like Lur's using some kind of octaver too, because there's a really high note in there. Here's something near the end for you, Frankie. There you go. I like that delivery there. That sounds great. Yeah, he sounds really enthusiastic.
Yeah, he sounds like he's having fun.
That's a good
thing. The guitar sounds great, too. Yeah, he's got a bit more overdrive maybe live on it. And those skanks sound, a little bit heavier and give it a little bit more push, which is cool.
I haven't heard too many live cuts of this one, so maybe that's the path for me to, I don't think I'm going to make it to Frankieville when it comes to my appreciation for this track, but I think I can at least maybe nudge it above mediocre in the Primus canon, but we'll see. We got another chance here. This one's from Luke's neck of the woods, maybe. Hunter, New York.
I wonder if it would be at Mountain Jam Festival.
That's what it's labeled, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Exactly. It sounds like we're going to hear the bass solo, right, Josh?
Let's do it.
Hey, I think I was at this show. Wait, what year was this?
2013.
Yeah, I was there. I was there.
There it is. Luke's getting
I actually was the girl that I was dating at the time was a performer that performed with an act that was there. She did LED hula hooping with an act that was there. And so I was very excited to be able to go and see Primus. I couldn't get backstage, but I got up there and I got to see him do it on a big, wet, muddy mountain in the rain. Nice. And it was a very appropriate, my name is Mud. It's all coming back to me.
Ah, very good. It was nice of you to ditch your girl to go see Primus, as most of us.
I took her with me, Josh. Okay, we enjoyed it together.
Sorry.
she got me in the festival, though, so I have to shout her out there.
Oh, good for her. Yeah. And good for you. Well, Thanks. Let's dredge up some more memories. Oh, they kind of bring it down halftime there, too. That was fun.
Yeah, cool breakdown.
It seems like the shape of that bass solo is there, and then he's changing up a little bit within that structure.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a typical thing for Les to do. You know, maybe take the first couple phrases from the album version of the solo and then improvise within it and change it up a bit each night, because it definitely has that kind of Phrygian line, and then goes off, and then he's all over the... like, he's really sliding up and down, having fun there. But yeah, it sounded pretty similar to the album version, honestly.
Our next cut is from Boston, Massachusetts, 2011.
Might have also been there.
Ah, let's jog your memory on that one.
Okay.
Oh, here's our halftime breakdown.
Jam vehicle.
Yes. Jay. What I like about that is Lur is essentially keeping the time so Jay can do what he wants to do.
Yeah. Jay almost gives it like that one drop, like a reggae kind of feel.
Yeah.
It almost reminds me of like the Toys Go Winding Down reggae sort of breakdown that they do live. And and it's cool to hear Les play kind of palm muted with the envelope filter. You know, in this song we were saying, you know, with that distortion that gets brought out when he's really playing it physically and loud. But that... it's got a cool, it gives it a different kind of timbre to it. You don't hear him use a lot. I like that.
Yeah, it certainly lends a different thing to it. It sounds great. I can't believe I'm saying that about the envelope filter. Probably because it doesn't reach its apex, I suppose, because you're tamping it down, you know?
It's not as open or wet, you know? You can really kind of like mess with the sensitivity control. The and kind of it's like you're opening your mouth on like how, like where you want it to be. And again, it can be kind of unpredictable, which is maybe why he loves it. But to play it with that kind of quiet dynamic is something cool that you don't hear a lot.
Yeah. Frankie, great choices, man. We got one more, but you're batting 1,000 so far.
This one, the last offering, is a Guinea Pig Tour selection. And I chose this one in particular because it starts off incredibly lively, some really great drumming, and there's even a firework going off during the intro.
Nice.
Perhaps by design, perhaps not. Yeah, Jay. Some kid playing with firecrackers in the audience. I think he really likes that line, the steampunk girls, because he really gives it a lot of life with every single iteration we hear. That's great.
That firework or firecracker almost lined up perfectly with the snare. That would have been cool.
It definitely gave it a little more whip crack, didn't it?
Yeah. Great firecracking snare sound.
Yeah. Jay gave a couple of nice fills in there, too, so he had the room. And at this point, even at the Guinea Pig tour, they've been touring for a year or so and jamming a lot, so he... you know, and he's a seasoned musician, so I guess he knew he had the room to do whatever he wanted to do on some of these tunes, which is great. And I imagine, and Luke, you can probably speak more to this because you guys cover Primus and other bands from time to time. Do you feel like you have more freedom to screw around when it's your music as opposed to somebody else's?
It's a good question. I think it depends kind of what your goal is. If your goal is in a cover to like replicate a song exactly the way it is, or to inject your own flavor and your own voice to it.
Right.
In terms of Primus, I mean, they're a band that the songs they cover sound nothing like the originals, you know?
Sure.
But they cover bands like The Residents. So it's in the, but you know, that's something that's so cool about them. But yeah, I think there's a balance. I think you always would feel more comfortable maybe improvising or taking liberties with your own music because you're not going to offend, you know, a fan of the band that you're covering. But I think it's important to also put some of your own personality into it. Yep. So it goes both ways.
You know, it just seems like Jay would have had freedom to do that with, you know, Brain and Herb songs too, while also staying true to their composition, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure it was nice for Jay after, you know, touring with the band and learning all these other parts to be able to improvise and flex on his own original parts. I'm sure that was fun, and they were having fun doing that on that tour.
It is so upbeat, and that's kind of what I'm going to take away from this. Is it's an upbeat tune. It's pretty exciting. They sound like they're happy to be making new music together. What more do you want from a band, I suppose?
They sound driven. I'm just using as many car puns as I can. I'm sorry.
Final thoughts on Hennepin Crawler. Do you like it more after talking about it for an hour?
Absolutely. I think it's a really fascinating song. It's full of twists and turns, fails and surprises every single time you listen to it. For me, a decade on, it hasn't gotten old, and I'm sure I've played it well over 1,000 times.
That is fascinating. So, Luke, going down memory lane here with Green Naugahyde and Hunter New York and Hennepin Crawler.
Yeah, man, it's a fun song. And, you know, like I said, we did cover it when the album came out, so I think we were all feeling that kind of excitement as well. And yeah, it's a fun driving tune. It's a fun one with the envelope filter. Sure, it's like more of that vamp and not heavy compositionally speaking, you know, but it's got that momentum and that drive. I mean, if they came out and opened with this song, that would really that would start the show off with a bang. So yeah, it's a good one. It's a fun Primus track. And it kicks off the album with some gusto. So I'm a fan. Yeah, for sure.
Luke Beeman, thanks so much again for joining us for the 33rd time. And where can the good people find you in the interwebs?
Yeah, no, thank you guys for having me. It's always a blast. Anybody that wants to check us out, lespecial.net has all of our upcoming tour dates and merchandise and stuff. And you can just hit us up on Instagram or Facebook at lespecialmusic. And we will be coming around the bend this summer. So, yeah. And feel free to hit me up at Luke Beeman Bass. I always love talking to other musicians that listen to Primus tracks and people that tell me of things that I messed up or I didn't. I encourage it all. So, holler at your boy.
Absolutely. And you're doing bass lessons, right?
Yeah, I'm doing bass lessons. You can just hit me up on Instagram at Luke Beeman Bass, and I will show you how to poorly imitate Les's envelope filter sound for a nominal fee.
I like adding for a nominal fee. It's just nominal. It's not fun nominal. It's just nominal. You're a reasonable guy.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. Hennepin Crawler, get down to pit row because you've been tracked. Next time, Frankie, get your fishing gear.
Ready for a Bodega Bay, Josh.
I just realized when I said get your fishing gear, I could have been talking about any number of Primus songs, but Frankie knew what I was talking about. Socials for us at Primus Tracks. Instagram, Twitter, PrimusTrackspod@gmail.com is the email address. Get some stickers. I got 1,000 of them. I don't want them anymore. Luke, I'll send you some more. Later days.
Willie Mays.